Lunch. Get up and get going with the Happy Valleys, 98.7 The Fox.
It is our Thursday edition of Let's Talk. It is the 80th anniversary, the commemoration of D-Day, one of the most unimaginable days, really, in the history of the world. And the courage and the bravery of the young men that day in Normandy, I don't think we can ever be told enough about it, and hearing the stories and understanding what was at stake and what occurred that day it's overwhelming. We will have an open phone segment at the end of today's program. The Mad Turtle will join us again at that time. And again, we do have live coverage today coming up at 2:30 of PIAA baseball playoff action quarterfinals with Bald Eagle Larry and Monito. Norm and Todd Brown will have the call.
See, that's what concerns me before we introduce our guest, all right? This is Scott. I'm the history guy, all right? I'm the guy that hiked 8 miles over the Gettysburg battlefield back on Sunday, and my calves are almost recovered. That was a long hike,
yeah.
But I had a lot of fun. But you know, this is an opinion. Pearl Harbor is an afterthought now. It's like nobody cares. Now, that was only 3 years before D-Day.
Yeah.
Nobody cares about December 7th anymore. Really, they just don't. And my fear as a history person is that D-Day is going to join that list, especially when those veterans are no longer with us. Folks, we can't allow that to happen. So, all right, there, let me get off my soapbox here. So we're talking about D-Day, and we want to welcome to our program Dr. Jared Frederick, who is from Penn State Altoona. First off, Dr. Frederick, good morning, and thanks for taking the time to be with us today.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. First off, I know we want to talk about a new book later on that you've got coming out, but you've done a decent amount of writing about World War II and so on. First off, let's find out about you, all right? Tell us something about yourself, your background. You're at Penn State Altoona. What do you teach down there? Tell us about yourself.
Well, I've been a history aficionado since I was in grade school, and by the time I was in fifth grade, I knew that I wanted to be a historian for my profession. So, unsurprisingly, that's what I studied throughout my life. And I just recently obtained my doctorate in American Studies, and over the past few years, I've written a number of books on the Second World War, including a book on D-Day. And in my previous life, I was a park ranger at Gettysburg National Military Park.
Hmm. Oh, you were? When was that?
I was.
When was this?
2009 through 2013.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, I was at Gettysburg on Sunday with a whole lot of other people. And we were hiking the fish hook, the Union positions, especially on July 2nd and 3rd, with two terrific guides, not park rangers. These were just two experts. I guess they were both licensed battlefield guides. And I had a great time. Again, my calves were screaming on Monday and Tuesday.
Like, yeah. Oh,
that's a long walk. That was longer than I thought. I'm not getting any younger anymore. Yikes.
Yeah.
So now, what do you teach exactly at Penn State Altoona?
I teach various courses in U.S. history, ranging from Pennsylvania history, various classes on the Civil War, World War II in the Pacific and Asia, and a number of survey courses.
How do I phrase this question? I love young people. I've got two daughters, all that sort of stuff. But how do young people take to history today? I mean, are they, your students, are they really, really interested? Or is it more of a situation that, oh, I've got to take this course? What do young people think about history today?
It's a little bit of both. A number of people are really engaged. A number of them are initially checking off a box. But I've noticed over time that a lot of those students who initially are there merely to meet a requirement become more and more engaged as the semester goes on. And that's really my job as a historian, to whet their appetite a little bit and give them a sense of appreciation that perhaps they didn't have before. And so it's always an ongoing mission. But I think you might find solace in the fact that of the topics that I teach, World War II has perhaps the greatest interest of students. I think even teenagers and 20-somethings today realize the weight and the significance of it as this existential crisis that their great-grandparents participated in 80 years ago. And I think the preponderance of movies, video games, and its place in our popular culture will leave it cemented as this iconic moment of our past. So I'm not quite as worried as much as you are, as you expressed a moment ago.
All right. Well, that's good to know. That's good to hear.
Yeah, for sure.
And actually, I've always wondered, or I've often wondered, finding ways to use video games to teach history. Now, the video games, Doctor, I keep seeing are like Grand Theft Auto or shoot 'em up games, or you know, right, beat the aliens and stuff. Is anybody out there making video games that actually are about history? They're about, I don't know, Napoleon, or they're about George Washington, or they're about the Civil War or World War II, and they're authentic. They're not ginned up, ridiculous, stupid stuff. Actual games to teach history. Does that even exist?
There are some. There are the shoot 'em up games, as you referred to. But there are strategy games, like, for lack of a better phrase, that can sometimes do a fairly good job. And I know for younger people that there are educational-based games that can be used in the classroom. So in our world of digitization, it's not merely a bunch of nonsensical content. There actually is good content-based material that is out there.
All right. Now, you mentioned you've written books, and you wrote a book about D-Day. Tell us about that book. What's in that book? Why write it?
That book came out 5 years ago. It's entitled Dispatches of D-Day. And of all the books that I've written, that one took the longest. I spent well over 2 years researching and writing it. And informally, I referred to it as a newspaper history of D-Day. And what I mean by that is that I went through 150 different American and international newspapers, and I collected what I thought were the best and most revealing accounts of the preparation for, execution of, and aftermath of the Normandy invasion. And I transcribed about 300,000 words in newspaper articles from the time period. And I called from those the best, and I stitched them together in narrative form to provide a snapshot image of what the American psyche was on the days before, during, and after June 6, 1944. And it was in many ways a joy to research, because there were hundreds of lost firsthand accounts that I recovered that I realized hadn't been read since 1944. And it very much felt like I was reviving the voices of the past to further explore how were Americans experiencing D-Day at both home and abroad.
What did anything surprise you when you're doing that research? Because what I cannot imagine again the the men that were getting off the boat, like, was there an immediate understanding of just how significant what was occurring in Normandy was in the overall scope of world history?
They did know that it was a significant day, and they sensed that even in the weeks and months leading up to it. They didn't know what date on which it was going to take place, but they knew that it was going to take place. And psychologically, they were preparing for months on end beforehand. This was the culmination of so much of their training. And I would say, additionally, one of the surprising things that I learned and I didn't expect was how D-Day impacted folks at home, particularly how it affected the civil rights movement in America in the 1940s. Because with, of course, the military being segregated in 1944, African Americans saw D-Day as a rallying cry and as a case in point, making the argument that black men and women are serving honorably in uniform. They are participating in the invasion. Are they not worthy of equal rights and opportunities back home? And so it was a major rallying cry in that regard, and that was one of the things that surprised me most.
Now, Doctor, should I assume you've been to Normandy?
I have on several occasions.
Okay, I figured. For me, Scott here, bucket list. I'd like to visit one day before I'm done. I'd like to go there. Describe Normandy. All right. I mean, I've seen pictures, beaches and hills and stuff. Describe Normandy from what you remember.
Yeah. Well, to put it in terms that might be comparable to you, it's kind of like the Gettysburg of France. It is very scenic. It is very pastoral. And between bits of farmland, there are a number of villages that are completely dependent upon American and British tourists. And you can find monuments dotting the landscape, but also gift shops, museums, and things of that nature. I'd say the one thing that's different in that regard is that pretty much all of the battlefields are privately owned, and or some of these small villages or communes might have ownership of some of the battlefields. France, in my mind, could very much use the likes of our National Park Service to consolidate and properly preserve a lot of the battlegrounds, but it's very different in that regard because it's kind of a patchwork historical landscape where you have all these private museums that tell you the main narrative rather than perhaps one cohesive driving route as you marched a few days ago at Gettysburg. But all in all, it's a place that every American should visit if they have the opportunity. And I would urge you that if and when you or your listeners ever do go there, go visit the other beaches, too. Go visit where the Canadians and the British and the French landed, because I think when people go visit there, dependent upon their nationality, they tend to pigeonhole their visit, and they merely focus on the country where they're from. And I think if you do that, you're doing a great disservice to yourself and the overall story. So go see Juno Beach, go see Gold and Sword Beach as well, in order to get the whole comprehensive picture.
And Omaha and Utah, five of them.
Yep.
Five of them there.
Absolutely.
We're going to take a break here in a moment. Doctor, I'm just wondering, is there somebody or some group out there that is counting how many living veterans of the battle are still with us? Is there such a number out there somewhere?
I'm not sure if the numbers are as specific as that, as the number of D-Day or Normandy campaign participants. But overall, of the 16 million Americans who served in uniform during the war, there's less than 1% of them that still remain.
That's not very many. Wow. Okay.
No.
We're going to take a break. When I come back, I'm going to share, well, I consider it a poignant story, which is kind of connected with this. Our guest again is Dr. Jared Frederick from Penn State Altoona. This is the 80th anniversary of D-Day, still a very important day to remember. We're going to take our break. You're listening to Let's Talk on 98.7 The Fox, and we will return after this.
Your home for the Goon and Ironhead, exclusively on Sports Radio 98.7
The Fox.
Discover a whole new world right here in your own backyard. Happy Valley is where you'll find everything from beautiful outdoor spaces to fantastic shopping and nightlife to the Central PA Tasting Trail. And you're already here. So plan your staycation and look for insider information at dispatch.happyvalley.com. Remember, whether it's you and your family or out-of-town guests enjoying the things we take for granted, lines are shorter and rates are lower in the middle of the week. Your next adventure begins now at happyvalley.com.
Plan your midweek getaway today and find lodging at happyvalley.com. Explore dining destinations, interesting attractions, historic sites, sports, shopping and boutiques, caves, and the Central PA Tasting Trail. Our hotels, inns, and bed and breakfasts are ready for your visit. Plus, rates and wait times are less during the week. Your adventures can also include hiking trails, biking, geocaching, and walking driving tours, too. Look for insider information at dispatch.happyvalley.com. We're in the center of it all. Plan your adventures today at happyvalley.com.
It's the Leser Lumber Summer Sale now through July 6th. Leser Lumber, your outdoor living headquarters for decking, lighting, and railing. Create a whole new outdoor living area with the best materials, including long-lasting Trex decking in all styles and colors, TimberTech decking from composite to advanced PVC, and the best grade of treated lumber. See all of our railing options, plus solar and LED lighting by RDI. Take advantage of no payments, no interest for 12 months. See all the outdoor living options at leserlumber.com. Leser Lumber, quality you can build on.
Do you have everything for your next get-together, party, or event?
Did somebody say something about a party?
Let the 64 Beer Store take care of all your party needs with great beverages and snacks. With over 400 beverage offerings, they have all of your beer, wine, and soda choices in one location. They also have tanks for the bigger events, too.
The 64 Beer Store, 1/2 mile north of Interstate 80, Lamar, 6102 Nittany Valley Drive, or call them at 570-726-8687.
It's the Leser Lumber Summer Sale, now through July 6th. Leser Lumber, your outdoor living headquarters for decking, lighting, and railing. Create a whole new outdoor living area with the best materials, including long-lasting Trex decking in all styles and colors, TimberTech decking from composite to advanced PVC, and the best grade of treated lumber. See all of our railing options, plus solar and LED lighting by RDI. Take advantage of no payments, no interest for 12 months. See all the outdoor living options at leserlumber.com. Leser Lumber, quality you can build on.
Brothers Pizza in downtown Bellefonte wants to congratulate all the graduating seniors from Bellefonte Area High School and Bald Eagle Area High School. The education of our young people are important for our future growth in the community. When planning for your graduation party, count on Brothers Pizza to take the stress off of your plate and let us do the cooking. Call ahead at 355-5581. That's 355-5581. Brothers Pizza, 102 North Allegheny Street in downtown Bellefonte.
Here's the WeatherBell.com forecast. Variable cline is warm, and you'll need your sense of humid today. It'll be a sticky subject, at least through the morning and midday. Watch for a shower or thunderstorm passing through the area. High temperature today, around 80 degrees.
Fox forecast.
Turning more pleasant tonight. Low temperature, 55 to 60.
This is WeatherBell.com Chief Meteorologist Joe Bastardi.
Sports Radio 98.7. The Fox. Going
It's our Thursday edition of Let's Talk. Coming up in the final segment, the Mad Turtle will rejoin us. We'll have some open phone time. And again, stay tuned this afternoon. We do have PIAA baseball action for you. It'll be Baldy Galeri and Monito at 2:30 with Todd and Norm Brown providing the coverage.
Again, our guest here is Dr. Jared Frederick from Penn State Altoona, talking about the 80th anniversary of the D-Day landings. And folks, if you watch news coverage, there's going to be news coverage today. Again, Normandy is 6 hours ahead of us. So in France, it would be mid-afternoon now. President Biden is there. Dignitaries from around the world are there. Some veterans are there. So there's a lot of, you know, watch for news coverage later on that. Here's the poignant thing that I just came across. You know, Dr. Frederick, we just booked this a couple of days ago. And so I jump online, just trying to do a little research. And I come across this story from our friends at Town and Gown magazine from 5 years ago, which was the 75th anniversary of the battle. And they did an interview 5 years ago with two local gentlemen who were part of this. Ken Spicer, who's from Bellefonte, Fred Abramson from Center Hall. And I read the interview, I'm like, oh, it's pretty cool. Then I did a little more digging, and I found that Mr. Spicer passed away 3 years ago. He was 101. Mr. Abramson passed away 2 years ago. He was 97. And that's why I asked that earlier question. They're just, you said 1% or so on. And I've read multiple stories this week. This could be the last commemoration actually attended by veterans. Now, I don't know. Is that a bit much, Dr. Frederick? That it's just this feeling of finality for this one.
Yeah.
Or do you think that's inaccurate?
No, I think that's entirely accurate, sadly. The passing of time can be harsh in this regard, and this is truly our final farewell to this generation, as sad as that may seem. It was inevitable, as it will be for all of us as we mark and commemorate any historical event, but considering that for the next big anniversary ending in a zero or a five, it will be 85 years. And so that means that the youngest of D-Day veterans would, by and large, be 103, 105, if they were in their late teens or early 20s at the time of the invasion. And I have no doubt that probably some veterans of D-Day or World War II will be present at the 85th. It will be an incredibly small number.
Yeah.
But these good folks are in the final chapter of their life, and I'm so happy that at least a few dozen or a few hundred of them are there today to participate in the commemorations.
Now, from your knowledge, all right, for all of us, we have movies. All right, and we're going all the way back to like John Wayne. All right, there have been World War II movies, not for 80. Well, yeah, maybe for 80 years. I mean, we've had movies going back. They were making movies during the war, you know, about various stories and stuff. But the thing with movies, I always wonder is, okay, is this accurate? You know, movie folks have a habit of changing the story and ginning it up a little bit and making it more sexy and exciting and stuff like that. There's one in particular, Saving Private Ryan. Now, that's the Tom Hanks movie. And if you've never seen that movie, the opening sequence, they landing on the beaches, it's intense. Like, wow. Now, Doctor, from your knowledge, maybe that movie in particular, is it accurate? Or did somehow Hollywood change it to make it look better?
So I would say that the first half hour of Saving Private Ryan is incredibly well done. It captures the trauma, the violence, the intensity of the initial landings on Omaha Beach. Naturally, it compacts the events in digestible form. In reality, some troops were stuck on the beach on Omaha for 6 to 8 hours at the utmost. And so I think for the narrative purposes of a movie, it does an excellent job in presenting a bite-sized version of that. The rest of the movie, Saving Private Ryan, is pretty much pure Hollywood. Its plot is far-fetched. It doesn't really match reality in regard to a plausible storyline. But all that said, it captures the ambience, it captures the violence. You really get a sense of what the terrain looked like, what the people looked like. And so I'd say it's authentic in that regard, but perhaps not accurate in the vastness of its plot.
Well, Hollywood is Hollywood. They got to change it up.
It's true.
More sexy, more, you know, exciting car chases and, I don't know, tank chases.
The images, though, in that opening
are incredible.
I mean,
it's like,
yes,
wow.
It is. And I've seen some folks that were actually, the veterans that are there today that said, yeah, that's... They did a pretty good job of encapsulizing, as you said, what that
right.
experience was like.
Yeah, folks, if you've
and in fact,
go ahead.
Yeah, in fact, the opening was so traumatic for some World War II veterans that the Veterans Administration actually opened up a help hotline specifically for that movie for veterans who had seen it. And it triggered bad memories for them. So, case in point, it's certainly got the message across.
All right. Now, Doctor, from your knowledge and your research, one thing that I've always been a bit mystified about this whole thing was just how much were the Nazis fooled about D-Day? I mean, the Nazis were not dumb guys. They were smart guys. And the whole, the disinformation campaign and General Patton, you know, obviously of movie fame and so on, had a fake army and fake radio traffic and fake this. I just find it difficult to believe that the Nazis were really that fooled on going up to D-Day. Or is that true? Did we really, really fool them?
They were truly fooled to the utmost. And in no small part, this had to do with, well, no surprise here, the Nazis' egotism, their own self of, well, self-confidence and self-determination. The German high command, Hitler among them, were convinced that the only possible place that the Allies could land in Western Europe was at the Pas de Calais. Which is the narrowest neck of the English Channel. And what Dwight Eisenhower and the Allied High Command do is they go completely against the Nazi expectations, and they cross at one of the widest necks of the English Channel, which is about 110 miles wide. And they, of course, land in Normandy, one of the places where the Germans least expected it. And so the Allies went against conventional wisdom. They did what was logistically the harder option, but in so doing, they bypassed the Germans in this very precarious strategic guessing game. And even days after the invasion, when hundreds of thousands of Allied personnel have stormed ashore, Hitler and various commanders in Berlin and elsewhere were still convinced that the landings in Normandy were still a distraction, that they were a decoy, that the main thrust was still going to come at Calais. And so I think that mindset very much illustrates the effectiveness of this deception game that had been going on for months leading up to June 6th.
So some of the most important folks of that never picked up a gun. They were just...
Absolutely.
They were code breakers and deception makers and so on. That I'm amazed, but okay, you've backed it up that we actually fooled them. That's just... okay. Now, Dwight Eisenhower, All right. Now, I was in Gettysburg on Sunday, and Dwight Eisenhower's home, his retirement home, is right off the Gettysburg battlefield. That's where he retired to when he stopped being president in the 1960s. How much pressure was on him? I mean, have you done any research on him? How much pressure was on him?
Oh, yeah. There was a reporter for the New York Times in 1944 who was assigned to Eisenhower's headquarters. There was a whole press contingent that was stationed at Eisenhower's headquarters to report on the latest developments. And she wrote that it seemed like each one of the four stars on Eisenhower's shoulder, she said it seemed like each one of those weighed a ton. That the weight of this moment was visibly apparent on him. And Eisenhower became a chain smoker. In the days leading up to the invasion, he was smoking four packs of cigarettes a day. That was his coping mechanism that allowed him to deal with all of this pressure that was being placed on him. And I think it's safe to assume that there are very few moments in history where the fates of so many were riding on the decisions of so few. Because as Supreme Allied Commander with hundreds of thousands of people of over a dozen different nationalities under his command, this was a responsibility that Eisenhower was not taking lightly. And as a case in point as to his merits as a leader, he also planned for the eventuality of failure. On June 5th, 1944, he scribbles a draft of a resignation letter. And in that resignation letter, it stated that the landings on the coastline of France have failed. I take full responsibility. This is no reflection on the men under my command. It was my decision, and if there is any blame to be cast for it, it rests upon me. That was a note that was not released to the public until several decades after the fact. But there was this small percentage in Eisenhower's mind acknowledging the fact that this could fail. And if it does fail, heads are going to roll, mine included. And so I think that is indicative of a truly good leader, where you plan and hope for the eventuality of success, but you're also willing to take responsibility for failure.
Yeah, we don't see much of that anymore, do we?
No, we sure don't.
All right, now, Doctor, we only have a couple minutes left. Very quickly, you have written a new book about the 8th Air Force featuring a local veteran. Tell us about this book, and I know you have some signing events coming up. Tell us about those.
Correct. The book is entitled Into the Cold Blue, and it is in part an autobiography of a veteran who still resides in the State College area. His name is John F. Homan, and he turned 100 years old in January. And the book chronicles his upbringing, his military training, but primarily his 34 combat missions over Nazi-occupied Europe throughout 1944. So he is thankfully still very sharp, fairly mobile, and we have a number of community events in the State College area that are coming up just next week. On Wednesday, June 12th, we're going to be at Big Spring Spirits in Bellefonte through local Historia, and we're going to be doing essentially a pub talk, so it'll be very informal, laid back. Come out and join us for some socializing and hear his stories firsthand. And then the following Saturday, June 15th, the day before Father's Day, he and I will be doing a book signing at the Barnes & Noble in State College from 2 to 4. And so to your point earlier, this is a wonderful opportunity to meet somebody who was very actively involved in the war. And even if you don't want to buy a book, that's okay. I would encourage listeners merely to come out hear some of his stories, shake his hand, thank him for his service. I don't think you'll regret it.
Give me the time again on Wednesday at Big Spring Spirits.
That will be at 7 p.m.
7, got it.
7 p.m. We
will make repeated mention of this on the program.
Yeah, I check that out. Well, Dr. Frederick, we appreciate your time this morning. Thank you for your research and work. And hopefully we don't forget, we keep remembering, which still that just concerns me a lot, that this is going to fade away. We can't allow this to fade away.
No.
Just can't. So, Dr. Frederick, again, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you so much.